Domi waits for the 3-2. Here it is. A swing and a high fly ball left center field. He's going to join the 500 club. Eyes on the run. He's at the track. He's at the fence. Leaps. Makes the catch.
Yes.
He took away a home run. Wow. What a play. Ramirez has it. Throws. Brody picks the perfect game. People going crazy here at U.S. Cellular. He's mobbed by his teammates. A perfecto.
White Sox. White Sox.
White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. The latest news and views from players, coaches, and direct from the front office. White Sox Weekly on the proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS AM 890.
Welcome in and good afternoon. I'm Connor McKnight, and you're listening to White Sox Weekly. We are the brand new and proud home of White Sox baseball here at WLS AM 890, and we've got a packed hour of White Sox baseball discussion here for you this afternoon. Want to get you involved as always. White Sox fans, your chance to interact and talk a little bit about your ball club. We are, and this is the exciting part. Yeah, it's Super Bowl Sunday coming up tomorrow. But what that means for baseball fans and for White Sox fans is that after Super Bowl Sunday, that's done. We're fine. Over, football, done. And then we're less than 2 weeks away from pitchers and catchers reporting to Arizona and out in Florida, wherever those teams end up being. It's an exciting time. Baseball's right around the corner. It's not next Thursday, but the Thursday after the White Sox pitchers and catchers report to Glendale. Couldn't be more excited about that. And then the 22nd position players start to roll in. A couple of things we want to get to on the show this afternoon, including your phone calls. 312-591-8900 is the phone number right here for White Sox Weekly. You can text that. You can text us as well. 68683. Your texts come in and we read them. We'll get to them. Please include WLS AM in your text message, or you can tweet at us. That's best done by tweeting at me at C1 McKnight. You got a question about the White Sox. We can talk a little baseball all around the league too, if you'd like. Interesting piece by Ken Rosenthal of Fox Sports about some of the free agents left on the market here. I think it makes for a kind of a larger baseball discussion. And then there's also some news, or at least a report done by Scott Merkin of MLB.com about the White Sox 2015 and exactly what that trade deadline looked like as the White Sox were coming up and nearing it. White Sox fans will remember that was that stretch of really good baseball, probably some of the best baseball that the White Sox ended up playing for a long period of time throughout the course of last year. From July 23rd to July 29th, of course, the White Sox won 7 straight in Cleveland in Boston. And that may or may not have affected exactly where the White Sox and what other teams were willing to do with the White Sox as the deadline approached. We'll get to that in a little bit as well. You will also hear from Sahadev Sharma. He's a baseball writer over at The Athletic. It's a new venture by some real familiar names here in town. Sahadev is the baseball guy there. You know, John Greenberg, formerly of ESPN. Scott Powers, too. They're writing a storm up, actually, is what they're doing. You can check it out. All of their research, all of their writings, and Sahadev has recently posted a couple of articles about the offseason for the White Sox and what he has kind of, you know, heard and looked at and kind of analyzed for this team coming into 2016, what was some of the moves that they've made. We'll talk to him coming up after a quick break here in a little bit. I want to walk us back a little bit to Sox Fest, because it was a heck of a weekend for me. My first Sox Fest here at WLS. Had a ton of fun meeting a bunch of people out there, a bunch of fans as well. Thanks to those of you who came up and said hello. Always appreciate it. Hopefully we can talk a lot during spring training and leading up into the season. But we also talked with a bunch of players. And one of the guys I found to be one of the more interesting interviews that we had sitting down at Sox Fest was Adam Eaton, White Sox center fielder. And I wanted to bring some of that back because I thought the conversation kind of alluded to a couple of interesting things. He spent probably 2 minutes of this interview. I asked him just kind of what goes through his head on a pitch-to-pitch basis. And it's almost terrifying. It's almost scary. And we laughed about it a little bit. It's almost scary to get into, I mean, because he let you know. He opened it up for you. So he opened it up and gave you exactly what goes through his head when he's out there in center field and the things that he has to keep in mind, the things that he has to keep up with, really, fairly terrifying and really give a lot. It's not, you're not just walking out there at a beer league softball game, you know, out there on North Avenue and swinging a couple and figuring out what happens and making sure you get back so that the Coors is cold when you get back to your dugout. It's a little bit more than that. So we'll get to all of that. You'll also hear from Chris Sale at points during the afternoon, too. Just a couple of pieces, one piece in particular that I want to bring back from Soxfest as well. Some interesting things about, you know, his position in the pitching staff now that he's much more than the young kid that we all kind of like to remember. Sometimes it's weird to think about just how long Chris Sale's been in the league already. And yet, you know, still on the flip side of that coin, how much is left for Chris Sale, too. It's kind of fascinating. Couple of things we want to get to first, though. I mentioned some news and notes. We've only got an hour, so we figure we kind of do the best we can to cram as much information and White Sox talk as we can. Your phone calls to 312-591-8900 is the phone number here. One piece of news, too. Connor Gillespie, former White Sox, has signed with the Giants on a minor league deal. Wanted to keep you up to date. And really, I mention this because of the little trivia note that I think is cool when it's attached to Connor Gillespie. And I saw this when he came over to the White Sox and found this piece of trivia fairly interesting. Did you know? Maybe we can make this a segment. Like, has anyone done a Did You Know segment before? No one has done a Did You Know segment on a baseball show before. Yeah, it's first time really breaking ground here. Connor Gillespie, former third baseman for the Giants and for the White Sox, of course, was the very first player to make the big leagues from the 2008 draft. He was drafted in the sandwich round, 37th overall. There were some other notable players in there. I know White Sox fans are kind of going back through your brain right now. Who was the White Sox first-round draft pick in 2008? A lot of people should know that. I'll get to that in a second. Also in that draft in 2008, Pedro Alvarez went second overall to the Pittsburgh Pirates. He's still looking for a job, unfortunately, for Pedro. Buster Posey went fifth overall to San Francisco. That was a pretty decent draft pick by them. Won himself a World Series, the very first of this draft to win a World Series. Not surprising since he did it in his rookie season. Gordon Beckham went eighth overall to the White Sox. Of course, he had himself a phenomenal rookie season. Jason Castro went 10 overall to Houston, a catcher there. Brett Laurie, now a White Sox. He was drafted 16th overall by Milwaukee, incidentally enough. Lance Lynn went 39 overall to St. Louis, and Wade Miley went 43rd to Arizona. Just some of the notable guys that I picked up out of that draft. Want to, and quickly here, let's see if we can fit it in. Scott Merkin was writing a little bit about the offseason. No, I'm sorry, not the offseason. The trade deadline that the White Sox had going up into the end of July last season. And, of course, as I mentioned when we opened the show, the White Sox had some pretty decent baseball going around in that year. Seven straight wins from July 23rd to July 29. And, of course, that got them to 49-50. And while under 500, they were, you know, depending on your definition of shouting distance, within it from a wild card conversation and even from the Central itself at the time. Now, obviously, Kansas City went on a roll, but the conversation started being a little bit different around U.S. Cellular Field and whether or not there needed to be the big move to either subtract and step back some and make the rebuild or add on. And there was a question of whether you could do both. There was a question of whether Jeff Samardzija could do both for you, whether moving him at that time, at that specific time, was going to allow you to bring in a piece that you could use that season to still compete and or step back some and make kind of a, I know Rick Hahn is going to crucify me for making this, but making the rebuilding move, I mean, let's be honest about what it was or what it could have been, I suppose, making that kind of a move. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. Sahadev Sharma is going to join us just after the break. Some interesting things going on still in free agency, and he's got to look at some of the pitching staff. I got to ask him a little bit about Chris Sale, guy we talked about a little bit too. 312-591-8900. Plenty of time for your phone calls just after the 12:30 news. Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic going to join us just after the break right here on White Sox Weekly. All the latest for your White Sox right here on WLS AM 890.
White Sox baseball. Experience it here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the new home for Chicago White Sox baseball, WLS AM 890. I'm Connor McKnight. We get to turn to an old friend. Well, he's not old. He's just, you know, our friendship is, I guess. Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic Chicago, a new venture here in town. You can get all your premium sports information and writings from them. Sahadev is going to be covering baseball for them this year, and he actually wrote some pretty interesting stuff on the White Sox just a couple of days ago. Hey, Sahadev, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Connor. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Pleasure to talk baseball with you, as always. Let's start here. And this is, you know, part of the conversation we've been having today, kind of as it pertains to the White Sox and baseball in general, is this offseason that kind of keeps on going with good players out there on the market still. You got Ian Desmond out there. You have Dexter Fowler out there. And it just so happens that the White Sox could line up need-wise with either one of those guys. So could a lot of other teams. And yet, I feel like this qualifying offer and the way we're stepping through this offseason, the way the rules are contrived, not only hurts players and salaries for the union and stuff like that, but I think it hurts mid-market teams more than Major League Baseball admits to.
Oh, no doubt. These rules have really kind of backfired in a sense. They kind of wanted to restrict spending on the draft, and they've completely restricted spending in free agency as well. And, you know, these mid-market teams, like you point out, they those draft picks are all the more important to them. They can't go that extra mile when it comes to spending money because they have to really consider how much money they're losing with the draft. Not only that draft pick, but the money that's tied to that draft pick. Right now, the White Sox would lose, I believe, the 28th pick in the draft if they sign any of these guys. And that's a decent pick, you know. I mean, that's not a guaranteed superstar prospect by any means, but look at their number three prospect right now, Spencer Adams. I believe he was picked in that range, if not a little bit later. These are talented guys that you can find, and the White Sox are really doing a good job of rebuilding a system that was considered pretty weak just a few years ago. And they need to do that. They need to have a balanced system along with a competitive major league team, and they're attempting to do that. And now if they really want to go out and get that final piece, so to say, it's going to hurt this whole process. It's unfortunate.
Well, and the other part of the conversation, the other side of that coin is, you know, the White Sox are putting themselves in a place to compete this year. But if you're a team like, I don't know, let's just say the Rays, for instance, and you're in a tough division, kind of like the way or the White Sox are, what's the benefit for you spending the money, especially on the back end, on a contract like Fowler's going to get, maybe a 3 or 4 year kind of thing, where the wins that you're adding, what, like 2, maybe 3 wins, maybe with a real great signing at this point, does that get you a divisional title if you're in that kind of division? Is that worth, you know, the spending risk at this point in the offseason?
Yeah, especially for a team like the Rays, like you point out, that's how they survive, is not spending a lot of money and hoping that their system can continually produces players that will help them kind of live on the margins as far as what they pay players. And, you know, you're paying cheap talent that's, superstar talent eventually, you hope, and you kind of build off that. It's tough. They can't compete normally without these restrictions often for free agents. And now you're putting even more restrictions on their ability to spend. If they, you know, if the market is dwindling on Fowler because of that pick, it's not because the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Cubs and the Dodgers are unwilling to spend on them. It's because even the smaller markets, they cannot spend on them. They can't even come, they normally wouldn't be able to compete. Now they have all the more reason to say, well, we can't even spend close to what we normally would have, because it's a double-edged sword for us. We get bounced in we get kicked for the money we spend, and we lose a draft pick. There's all these unfortunate side effects of these rules. And I think we're going to hear, this will be one of the top things brought up when the CBA expires at the end of the season.
Yeah, that'll be a fun conversation to have as the season draws to a close. We're talking to Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at Sahadev Sharma here on White Sox Weekly, WLS AM 890, your new home for White Sox baseball. Want to bring up a conversation that I had, Sahadev, and I know you did some talking with Todd Steverson, the White Sox hitting coach, this past year. Jose Abreu cut his first pitch swing percentage in half last season, just kind of took the first pitch and laid back on it, at least a lot more than he did in his rookie season. I wonder, you know, we talked with Todd a little bit about it, and I wonder from your perspective, what did that do to his outcome throughout the year? How did that benefit him, and how do you think that necessarily changes what he does in this his third season?
It was interesting. I noticed in his first season as well, it was kind of like a tale of two halves, you know? It was a lot of power in the first half, and kind of in the second half, he kind of had to adjust to how pitchers were pitching him, and the power went down, but the on-base percentage went skyrocketing. Yeah. And I kind of think that's the ideal situation, obviously, is for him to somehow combine both of those, and perhaps that's what he was trying to do with the first pitch. I mean, there's benefits and takeaways from not swinging at the first pitch, right? You know, you're being a little bit more patient, but maybe if you're being too patient, you're missing out on that best pitch that you're going to see, because pitchers often try and get ahead. I'd have to look at the exact numbers, but my guess is pitchers weren't trying to sneak in a strike with Abreu with that first pitch, just because they knew what he was doing in his first year was kind of jumping on that pitch. So they altered their approach. So it was probably wise for him to take away that first pitch and just sit there and be a little bit more patient. It all depends on how pitchers adjust back. Are they going to be aggressive and early in the count now with him because they saw that he dropped his first pitch swing percentage? Abreu seems like a pretty smart hitter and a guy that adjusts pretty well. So I think he's constant battles, and when you really break it down to, you know, first pitch swing per percentage and all these little things, it's kind of fascinating just how much goes into hitting and pitching and all those things. So I think what Abreu is really trying to do is combine that first year and put it into a full season. And he kind of started to do it last year, and there were glimpses of it. And by no means is he a disappointment last year, but I think he got overshadowed by, you know, guys like Rizzo, who took that next step and kind of became built upon their 2014 and became a superstar in 2015. Bray is still a superstar, but was he at that MVP level that people had him at in 2014? Probably not last year, but I think he can still get there. And I think it's almost like people have kind of forgotten about how good Abreu is just because he didn't really build upon 2014 as maybe some expected.
Yeah, and yet the 30 home run and 100 RBI, and I know they're not you still need those numbers, those counting stats to win ball games, but, you know, they're not the sabermetric darlings that a lot of people have looked at. When you take a look at the side of the White Sox shortstop situation, obviously Tyler Saladino seems to have the inside track there. Let's put the hypothetical to you this way. If Tyler Saladino is not the White Sox opening day shortstop, barring an injury to Tyler, what's happened for the White Sox throughout the course of spring training?
Unless they've signed someone, that means that, I guess, Tim Anderson just forced the issue. I don't know, or that'd be really surprising to me.
Okay.
Saladino's a pretty big... he's a pretty big upgrade for them defensively. Ramirez struggled last year, and, you know, he's been kind of reliable in a sense defensively and even plus-plus. But last year he was probably average at best defensively. You upgrade the defense alone with Saladino. The offense isn't going to be an upgrade, right? I mean, you don't know what you're getting from him offensively. So maybe he's impressive offensively, maybe not. But that glove looked really solid in a small sample, enough that projections have him being like a 1.5 win player solely on that glove.
Wow.
That's really nice. That's a guy that if you believe Chris Sale and what he's saying, that he wants to get guys out earlier in the count, he's going to need to rely on his defense. I mean, Quintana relies on his defense. Rodon wants to get more ground balls, right? These guys they can all strike guys out, but they also want to get guys out early in the count. And if the defense is the worst defense in baseball for the second year in a row, that's not going to help things. They need up the middle defense, and they've really focused on that with acquiring Frazier, with acquiring Laurie, and now with the belief that Saladino has a plus glove at shortstop. Now you have a really nice infield, and you can really save your pitchers a lot of extra work, a lot of extra pitches, and save the team runs.
Talking with Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic. You know, you mentioned Chris Sale wanting to get batters out earlier in counts. He also mentioned over the course of Sox Fest that, and this kind of surprised me a bit, I don't know if it'll surprise you as much, he mentioned that the changeup is the pitch that he's kind of most comfortable with right now. Does it surprise you at all, and does that correlate somewhat with his ability or his desire, I should say, to try and get guys out earlier in counts?
I mean, maybe I'm not surprised by it, just because when you really look at his arsenal, he does three things really well. I mean, he's got the fastball, he's got the slider, and he's got the changeup. And the changeup really developed, I want to say, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where he had, you know, a really nice fastball and one of the best sliders of baseball, and suddenly this weapon comes out, a changeup that's just devastating, to the point that people were a little concerned about his possible injuries. And when he upped the changeup usage, that kind of allayed some fears that, okay, he's not going to rely on the slider, which some believe you throw a lot of sliders, you're begging for an injury. And the changeup usage being upped kind of allayed those fears. And not only is it saving him a chance from injury, but it's a devastating pitch. And I mean, if he's going to rely on that more, that's fine. He can rely on whatever he wants. he's got three plus pitches. I think he's the best arm in the American League. I think he sputtered down the stretch, but for the first 5 months of the season, I think he got off to a rough start, if I'm remembering correctly, but that middle part of the season, he was the best pitcher in the AL.
Yeah.
And it was just the final few starts that kept him from being in the Cy Young conversation. I think entering September, I think I had him near the top of my hypothetical Cy Young ballot. So I wouldn't be concerned at the least bit about Chris Sale. I think he is far and away the most talented pitcher in the American League, and the only thing holding him back is one or two bad outings and maybe the Minnesota Twins for some reason.
Yeah, the Twins do seem to do that to old Chris. Even still, I'd take him any day. Sahadev, thanks so much. Really appreciate the time. Always a pleasure talking baseball with you. He's Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic Chicago. Follow him on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma. More to come here on White Sox Weekly, right here on your home for White Sox baseball, WLS AM 890.
Steve Dahl, Jonathan Brandmeier, and the White Sox, WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight, here with you up until 1 o'clock. 312-591-8900 is the phone number. You want to talk a little White Sox baseball. We're less than 2 weeks away from pitchers and catchers report. Wait, is that right? Did I do that right? Did I do the calendar math right? That's definitely one thing I'm terrible at, is calendar math, counting days. Probably should be better than that. It's next Thursday. Not next Thursday, but the Thursday after that. The 18th of February is what it is. It doesn't matter. Super Bowl Sunday ends, and then baseball season for everyone who likes it. It starts officially after Super Bowl Sunday. Like, as soon as that final thing, as soon as whoever it is wins that thing and says, I'm going to Disney World, everybody else starts loading up and going to spring training. Wanted to get to a piece by Scott Merkinum, MLB.com. We had him on the show throughout our 3 days at Sox Fest 2016 out at the Hilton, Chicago, which was an awesome time. I got to talk to a lot of people in the White Sox organization, players and reporters and fans and everything like that. Merkin was, Scott, I should say, one of the guys we talked to, and he wrote a piece over on MLB.com. Go check it out if you want to read the entire thing. I just want to parse a piece or two of it for you if I can. This came out late Thursday, and Merkin was writing and talking with Rick Hahn about the trade deadline this last season. Obviously, you remember the White Sox were playing some pretty decent baseball heading up to the deadline, rattled off 7 straight. I believe they won 17 of 25. From the end of June all the way through July 29th. Pretty good numbers. Got themselves back into a conversation. Things felt a little bit better. The offense had heated up some. The pitching was obviously much better. I think, you know, Jeff Samardzija ratted off a couple of pretty good starts there too, but he was still the topic of debate, I guess, as to whether or not you deal him for something that's going to help you this season and in a push to chase down the Tigers and the Royals for the AL Central, or even, and what was more likely at the point, is at the time, rather, is getting into the wild card conversation, or whether you deal him for you know, pieces to help you build for a future, build for 2016, guys who are, you know, relatively close to Major League ready, guys who at the time, you know, kind of like that Jake Peavy deal, brought over Avisail Garcia, who spent, you know, like a, what he spent, like a month, like a maybe 100 at bats in AAA after the White Sox had dealt for him and then got brought up. You know, something analogous to that, as opposed to a step-back deal for a 20-year-old in A-ball kind of thing. Merkin talked to Rick Hahn here, and I want to read some of the quotes that he got and exactly what the conversation was happening. And I think Rick makes, you know, one point in particular here. It's fairly interesting. Here's Rick Hahn talking about his team leading up to leading into those last couple of days. Our team was playing the way you envisioned it playing when the whole thing was put together, said White Sox general manager Rick Hahn, whose team won 17-25 from June 30th to July 29th. Certainly the winning streak leading up to the deadline sort of reinforced the good feeling that, hey, we're turning this corner here. But it wasn't like if we lose tonight, we've got to make a move. And if we win tonight, we're staying the course. It was really an extended look at it. We spent a fair amount of time with some of our objective analysts trying to figure out exactly what's the likelihood we could make the postseason given the amount of teams in it and remaining schedule. We had an idea what the chances were. Every club knew exactly what we were doing, Hahn said. This is a little later in the piece. We were having conversations with some clubs about adding. We were having some conversations about subtracting, potentially. Those don't necessarily happen July 27th, 28th, and 29th. Those are going on for several weeks. And I think maybe that's the part that I kind of thought was most interesting in this is I would imagine it's somewhat difficult, although it happens at times. I would imagine it's somewhat difficult to, you know, on the 28th of July, strike up the band on a completely new and completely original trade discussion with another ball club whose situation is also likely fluctuating like yours is, you know, in that wild card conversation with a handful of teams above you, a division that hasn't quite taken off yet at the top, still giving you some hope as to, you know, you can kick it around in your own division for a little while. The White Sox are far from the only team who are in that, you know, that same position, especially in the American League, given the wide berth of, you know, wild card contenders all the way up to the deadline there. But you've got to deal with, you know, conversations, or at least start from conversations that you've been having. At least that's kind of what Rick Hahn's talking about here. So I thought that was a fairly interesting thing. You can check out the whole article. It's a pretty good one. Scott Merkin does good work over at MLB.com. Check that out. Read a little bit more up on it. I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about last season as we get into the next one. But right now, Chris Sale got a chance to sit down with us, or rather we got a chance to sit down with Chris Sale at Sox Fest, and we talked a little bit about, we talked about a lot of things, but specifically, a piece of the conversation I asked him about was his move from rotation kid, you know, and this kid with raw stuff, and my God, this lefty, and all that kind of thing, and moving from the bullpen into the rotation, too, and now he is this elder statesman. He is perpetually and perennially in Cy Young conversations. He is now kind of the leader of this rotation. And I thought that's interesting from a kid who's, you know, still young in his major league career and yet kind of shepherds over, at least, you know, stuff-wise and advice-wise, for a lot of younger kids. So he starts talking about his relationship and his getting to know Carson Fulmer, the White Sox latest number one pick, who is also, incidentally, from the very same town in Florida. Here's Chris Sale.
It's been cool, actually. My wife and I were out with Carson and his fiance last night, sure. And it was weird because, you know, we're sitting there with them, and they're, you know, they're asking us questions, and, you know, what's it like, you know, what's this, what's that, and it was funny. My wife and I, we just kind of caught ourselves, and it's like, but we were in that position, a few years ago, so it's cool. And, you know, I was fortunate, very fortunate for myself to have very reliable people when I was here. I mean, you know, with JJ Putzi and you know, Thornton out there in the bullpen, you know, my first few years, and, you know, kind of getting me through and kind of showing me the ropes and stuff like that. You know, it's fun to kind of pass that information along, you know, to kind of through the ropes too.
Well, because learning about living a major league lifestyle, and I'm not talking about, you know, the fun stuff, because the fun stuff happens, but, you know, learning to deal with the ups and downs of a season, learning to deal with the grind that is 162, you got to have... You got friends on a ball club to get you through, whether you're, you know, struggling or, you know, check your head a little bit if you're striking out 19 every other night.
Yeah, it's definitely a whirlwind. I mean, this is a very kind of busy lifestyle. I mean, you're here for 3 days, and then, you know, living out of a suitcase, you're away from your family. I mean, I have a 5-year-old son who, you know, it's fun to hang out with him. But, you know, you're gone for 10 days at a time, and, you know, it gets tough. But, you know, it's all worth it. I mean, this is what I've dreamed about my whole life doing, no doubt, and I love doing it. But you definitely want to be as prepared as you can for this because, I mean, you're traveling through time zones. I mean, sometimes it's 5 o'clock where you're at. Sometimes it's 9 o'clock where you're at, you know, and the more prepared you are for this, I think the better off you are because, you know, the more comfortable you can get with kind of a crazy lifestyle, the better off you are.
So you set a White Sox record with 274 strikeouts last year. You did it in 200 and some change innings. The last guy took 400 innings to get there. I said, yeah, no, give the man some applause. He set a White Sox record. Come on.
Thank you.
What is, you know, if you could look back at that kid that came up and threw 70-some innings out of the bullpen when he hit the major leagues, what's one thing that you'd tell that kid that he learned over the last 5-6 years? Whether it's about yourself playing baseball or what it took to get to the mark you were at this last season.
Work.
Really?
Work. I mean, it's hard to kind of put into words, but I mean, there's a lot of work that goes into this, not only for ourselves, but other people. I mean, there are a lot of people that work really hard to help me do what I do. And, you know, not a lot of times they get the credit they deserve. But I mean, it is a lot of work to be prepared every single day. And even more so for a position player. I mean, those guys, they're out there every single day. I mean, you have guys going out there playing 150, 155 plus games. That takes a toll on you, and it takes a lot of work. I mean, shoot, I mean, you can walk up a flight of stairs and, you know, your knee starts hurting a little bit,
right,
and you got to play tomorrow, and that, you know, that it just, you know, there's a lot of things that go into it, and, you know, it's just a lot of work, and I think that's what I've learned is just to work and get through it and, you know, stay aggressive.
Do you think pitchers get a short end on that reputation-wise? I mean, because you got guys like, I mean, you run foul poles. You've been there. You know the whole thing. Like Eddie Guardado goes out there though, and he doesn't look like you. And Ray King goes out there, and he didn't look like you. I mean, but pitchers are athletes too.
That's pretty aggressive.
There's
not a doubt in my mind. Being a position player is tougher than being a pitcher. There's no. I mean, I play 33 times a year at most.
Right.
You know, and there's a certain level of you know, work and hard work and stuff and dedication that goes into that. But playing every day, there's got to be nothing like playing every day. I mean, even being in the bullpen. I mean, the difference between being in the bullpen and being a starter is even huge. I mean, even nights that you're not pitching in the bullpen, you know, your mind is still going. Because you never know. You could pitch 4 days in a row. You could not pitch for 7 days. You can go on, off. So you're always prepared to go in. And those guys down there kind of know where they're at. So it's like, you know, the seventh inning rolls around. Well, you know, Nate Jones, he's getting prepared to pitch.
Sure.
You know, and even if he doesn't go in, his wheels are still turning. So, I mean, sometimes even when I was in the bullpen, you get home and, you know, your wheels are still turning. I mean, you get into the game and you get – so, you know, it just takes a toll on guys that play every day.
Quickly here before we leave, I got to ask you, you feel good about where this team is and what the 25 it looks like that, you know, that could break camp with you? I mean, you feel good about the moves that have been made?
Absolutely. I mean, we have just as good a chance as anybody, and I really think this division's up for grabs.
That's Chris Sale checking in at Sox Fest just a couple of days ago. He mentioned, you know, it's kind of a theme throughout Sox Fest that I kind of was asking guys about, the wheels that turn during the course of a game. Adam Eaton, White Sox center fielder, talked about that too. It was a fascinating chat with him. You want to get inside the brain of a major league center fielder? You're going to. That's coming up next right here on WLS AM 890.
Passion, pride, tradition. The White Sox play here. WLS AM 890.
Welcome back. I'm Connor McKnight here on White Sox Weekly. Last season, Adam Eaton played really two different baseball seasons. And we had a chance to sit down with him at Sox Fest, and I thought it was a fascinating interview. I just had to bring it back. He lets you inside the mind of a center fielder in the major leagues. In the first 57 games for Adam Eaton, he slashed .241, .299, and .358. He wasn't very good, admittedly. He's talked about it many, many times. However, in the last 438 plate appearances, his numbers, his slash line went to .315, .397. It's an on base of damn near .400. and he slugged .476. He nearly tripled his home runs, given the output, given the rate numbers, and he tripled his stolen bases, or more than that either. More than that, his team played a heck of a lot better when he's playing well as well. So this season, the White Sox look for that part of Adam Eaton, and I think you're going to end up getting it. Here's why. We talked with him just a little bit about what it was to have two halves like that at Sox Fest. Here's how he responded.
I don't really try to dissect it too much because I lived it, and it wasn't that fun early, and it was a lot of fun later as an individual, but you know, realistically, I've tried to put it behind me and move forward. You know, it's just 1 year in a grand scheme of things, and you know, as a team, we didn't do what we wanted to do, so just try to wash it and you know, try to duplicate you know, a mixture between my first year and my second year here.
You're having a little bit of a conversation with your hitting coach Todd Steverson yesterday, and we were talking mostly with Todd about Avi Garcia and, you know, kind of what the approach is and what mentality is for hitters, that kind of thing. How do you like working with Todd? How is he different from hitting coaches that you've had in the past? And, you know, was there a moment last year where you guys kind of, because there's got to be some kind of bond at some point between a hitting coach and a player. Was there a spot for you that happened?
Yeah, a little bit here and there. You know, Todd's a great hitting coach. He's a great, you know, shoulder to lean on when you need him. But to be honest with you, at this point, and I feel like in a lot of guys' career, it's you're kind of your own hitting coach, to be honest with you. You know, you feel what you feel. You know, there's work being done when he's not there, and you know, he's not in the box with it. He's not going through, you know, mentality or your mental approach, which I think is, you know, 80 to 90% of what hitting is just your mental approach and how you're thinking the game in the box. So there wasn't really a time where, you know, him and I had an aha moment for any stretch of the imagination. It was just like, hey, again, I always say this, and I'm sorry for, you know, the little kids out there, but Paul Konerko always told me you can only suck for so long. And so I've always taken what Paul has said, and I've tried to use it to the best of my ability. And you know, like I said, early to mid-April, early May, I definitely said that to myself quite a few times. And then it just turned around, and we started heading the right direction.
I'm pretty sure Paul told me that on a broadcast I was having a particularly bad day on, too.
Hey, you're all right.
It's all right, man. You can only suck for so long. Things will be okay.
It's a great saying. It's true. You know, if you have a lot of confidence in yourself and you believe in what you're doing, you know, it's going to turn eventually. It's going to go in the right direction. So,
you know, you look at the work. Thinking back to Paul Konerko, I remember talking to him about, you know, some of the hitting drills that he did, all that kind of stuff. I mean, he was cerebral is almost too light of a word to use when you talk about Paul and his approach to hitting. I mean, it was all encompassing. It was almost holistic.
Crazy.
The way he thought about
it. Yeah, very crazy how down to a science he had his swing. And even when he'd be crushing baseballs, there'd be still something wrong with his swing,
right,
which is crazy. But, you know, I had a chance to hit with him his last year, you know, previous to his last year in the offseason when I got traded over. And
right.
and just his work ethic in general is, you know, top tier. I mean, you can't compare it to anybody else's work ethic. But at the same time, he drove himself nuts because he is always trying to be perfect. And you know, we're all perfectionists, but he's the, you know, realistically, he is the, you know, the sign for a perfectionist.
So we talk a lot about, as baseball fans, whether it's, you know, one specific player, really any kind of player across the board. I kind of want to, you know, bring it back to looking at just baseball in general, not talking about anybody specifically. We look at offense, I think, as fans or as members of front office and stuff, and we understand that offense can kind of be this up and down thing. You know, we allow for guys to have great seasons, and then we go, oh, well, they can't be that good again, and then they have a nice season. And we go, okay, that's fine. You know, we expect that kind of thing. I've always thought that defense can be kind of, you know, it can fluctuate too. It's not the steady, constant thing that I think a lot of fans want to grant it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if that's something that gets talked about more, you know, in the off season with you guys, or if that's something that is kind of more thought of on a constant basis than the hitting is.
Yeah, you know what? For me, defensively, as an individual, I wasn't very good last year, and I think everybody knows that. But I'm hoping that it's that way. You know, I put in the same amount of work. I tried my best. You know, I don't know if it was the weather or what was going on, or if it's just I had some funky reads throughout the year and you know, made some good plays, but at the same time made some bonehead plays. So hopefully we can clean that up. I think every day, you know, like you said, with the focal point on it, you know, up and downs, but you can bring defense every day. You can bring effort every day. You know, whether it's there or not, I mean, baseball's a funny game, but, you know, we just really concentrate on bringing effort defensively every day. And I think pitching and defense wins championships. So if we want to, you know, make it to the playoffs and make it to the final destination, we're going to have to pick it up defensively for sure.
Are you a guy that likes to, I think the game is kind of an overstated thing, but when you're out there in center, you know, What's your mindset and how is it that you – I mean, do you go through like – like in Little League, I always used to get yelled at because it's like, Connor, the ball just got hit to you. How do you not know where you're going with the damn thing? I mean, is that – do you go through that specific a process when you're out there?
Yeah, I wish the casual fan would just be in one of our heads for one game. And you'd be like, what in the world is going on here?
These guys needs help.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, on any given day, just to give you a quick little scenario, you know, if I'm sitting in the outfield, you know, first of all, I'm checking the inning, the outs. Then I'm picking up, so Chris Sale's throwing his tendencies, what he likes to do in certain counts. I know his percentages, he throws changeups, what he throws fastball in what count, early on, late. Now, what's about the hitter? You know, is it Miguel Cabrera? Does he go really well the other way? Now about the wind. Now in Chicago, the wind is unreal, terrible. It swirls. You have to pick up trash on the track.
Cause sure.
The trash on the track usually tells me where it's going. So if it's going back and forth slush and we're in trouble, like, you better hold on to your hat. And then I have to check my left fielder, my right fielder, my second base, and my shortstop. Now, how are they feeling? Their knees bad? Is their arm good? Are they going to come out, you know, more in a cut and relay? Is my left fielder, how's he doing? Is he hitting well? Is he in a bad mood? Is he in a good mood? All these things run through my mind. And then lastly, the weather. You know, where's the sun at? You know, how am I going to play him with the depth and whatnot? So all those things come into my mind. And the catcher as well. You know, who's catching? Because realistically, he makes the decision with pitches to be called. So.
All right, so now here's the wind and the pitch. Ball 2-1. Now you do it all over again?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Now it's 2-1. It's a ball. You know, a 2-0 is probably playing to pull. 2-1 still, I'm probably still playing to pull with Miguel Cabrera, but he likes to go oppo, so I may have an open stance.
Yeah,
so I might have an open stance here. You know, Chris throws changeups late in counts, so maybe he might pull one, so maybe I'll square up just a tick more. You know, I looked at Melky, I looked at Abby. Hey, what are they doing now? Abby's moved because the sunflower seed spit over here, and it didn't break, so he's going to move over two steps and pick it up, put it back in his mouth.
Sure.
And now he's moved over, so now I have a different gap that I have to move over, and all these go through my mind.
So, Adam, who rescues you from this when you get home? No, seriously.
My wife.
Is that the dynamic that you guys have? Because you have to, and I know I've talked to players about this before, like, when you have to shut it off at some point and return to being a normal human being, or as close as we get anyway.
Yeah, no, definitely my wife and family, they get the brunt of it mostly. It's a very stressful game. I love the game, trust me, but turning it off is very difficult, especially say, you know, last two years I've lost a lot of hair. I've gained a lot of white hairs in my beard. I feel like I'm going to have a La Roche gray beard at the end of my chin here shortly.
Are you growing it out again this year? Because I remember last season.
As long as wherever Jerry is. Jerry Reinsdorf around here?
I haven't
seen
him.
He needs to let me grow my beard out.
Did you have a talking to? I mean, did you bring the clippers down to
the
clubhouse?
No, sometimes he just sends a little note down, have it and trim it up. It looks awful. And I'm like, I have an ugly face. I need to cover up as much as I can. Like, help me out here, Jerry.
Does he not? I mean, how do you explain that?
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, hey, Rochi's got one. Why can't I have one?
You
got
to find him behind the cage one day. Just be like, Jerry, listen.
This is the deal.
Sir, you don't want this face.
You don't own the team or anything. Let me tell you how this is going to go.
That's a real good way to start a relationship with your owner.
I'll be traded the next day.
That's Adam Eaton having a little fun at the end of the interview. I just had to bring that back because being inside of a big leaguer's head is something that we don't get a chance to do all that often. Adam lets you in. And it kind of, I don't know, hopefully it gives you a little perspective. If you didn't know before, if you haven't heard somebody take you through it, there you have it. Hopefully Adam Eaton has his final 438 plate appearances of 2015 all throughout 2016 and spurs the White Sox from the leadoff spot. That's going to do it here for us on White Sox Weekly. Thanks so much for listening as well. We will be back next Saturday from noon until 1, and we will be that much closer to pitchers and catchers reporting. We'll take a look at the farm system. We'll get set with everything coming up and get you set for spring training as well. That'll do it for us. News is next. I'm Connor McKnight here on White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly. And starting in 2016, hear the games here. The proud new home for Chicago White Sox baseball. WLS AM 890.